Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen. Linda Armstrong isn't feeling well today, so she's taking the afternoon off, but I'll be doing the show solo today. Today is Friday, January the 18th, 2019. It is 4 p.m. in New York, 1 p.m. in Los Angeles, 9 p.m. in London, and Sydney, Australia is looking at 8 a.m. Wherever you are in the world, thank you for tuning in. I appreciate it. To yet another episode of LOA Today, your daily dose of happy. And as I said, Linda isn't going to be able to join us today. Kind of sad, but true. But nevertheless, we'll just, we'll keep on keeping on. And we'll have a good time, and we'll make it, a fun experience. So we've been through a few of these this week. This is like the third day where I lost a co-host. I think it's the third. Yeah, Cindy missed a couple days, and then today Linda. So I guess I'm getting used to doing the solo routine, but I've gotten some nice feedback from those of you who are the live stream listeners and a little encouragement, so that helps a little bit. And plus the book that we started on Wednesday is a pretty darn good book, so I figure, hey, let's just go with that for a while, and we'll see if we can, I don't know if we can complete the story today, but at least we can get further into it than we were, and hey, it's a good story, it's fun. So people are piling in here. I'm glad to see that. That's really good. Nasha's got tears of joy going on. She texted me that she's got some really cool stuff going on. And she even quoted here. She says, my sister and friends had planned a sorry for my sister, and she hugged me, and we all cried and hugged for the first time. Said sorry to one another for being so unreasonable. Whoa, what a great story that is, Nasha. Look what you manifested. Father wished, oh my goodness, everybody's jumping in from the family. Amazing what happens when you change your mindset, isn't it? Holy cow, that is fabulous. Congratulations, Nasha, because we all know you've been going through quite a bit lately. So that is really, really great news. That's fabulous. And a lot of people saying hello, wow, this is great. All kinds of tears of joy and all kinds of nice comments there. People tuning in saying hello and so forth. So, hey, we're off to a good start. Nasha had a fabulous manifestation. That is really, really good news. Good way to start the weekend, too. That's really good. So, congratulations. I'm really happy for you, Nasha. I know everybody else is, too. So, let's go back to the book we were reading the other day. Into the Magic Shop by Dr. James Doty. We got partway into the second chapter, and to be honest, I didn't actually mark where we were in that second chapter, so I'm going to have to kind of dig it out a little bit here. But just to give you a reminder of what we had covered so far in the story, the author is telling this story from when he was a young kid living in Lancaster, California. Very poor, dysfunctional parents. His father was an alcoholic. His mother suffered from what was probably chronic depression, but the family was too poor to even get that diagnosed. And he basically spent his summer days riding his bike around town anywhere but home, just so he didn't have to be at home. Ended up in a new magic store that had opened in the town and befriended a woman who was staying there with her son for about 6 weeks. And this woman is teaching him what we now know of as the law of attraction. And she does it using a slightly different method from what Abraham teaches, slightly different from what Neville Goddard teaches, slightly different from what other teachers teach. But it's essentially law of attraction. The four basic steps she teaches are you relax your body. We call that meditation. You relax and stop your mind from going on off in all directions. Also part of meditation and also part of mirror exercises. You, in her words, you open up your heart, which basically means you start tapping into your feelings about what it is that's going on in your life. And then the fourth step is putting out your intention. Well, that's pretty much the law of attraction as we understand it. So let's see, where were we in the book? We're in the second chapter, and I believe he's already been exposed to the meditation part. I think this is actually the chapter where he gets exposed to slowing the mind down. But he gets back to the shop, and they were not quite sure he was going to show up, but he shows up and he sees Neil, who is Ruth's son, who is the shop owner. And Neil greets him as he comes in the door. So I'm not sure if I started this part or not, but I figure this is kind of a good part to start. So let's see. I'll pick it up from here. I could see Ruth through the window of the magic shop that first day as I rode up on my orange Schwinn Stingray with its white banana seat. Anyone who lived in the 60s and 70s recognizes those bikes. I remember that bike so well because it was the most valuable thing I had, and I had bought it with my own money, money made from mowing lots of lawns in the heat of those long summer days. And as I pulled up, I saw that she wore a big blue headband that held her shoulder-length brown hair away from her face, and her glasses dangled on a chain at her neck. Her dress looked almost like the big smocks we had put on over our clothes during art class at school. It was exactly the same color as the Lancaster sky in the morning, the lightness of blues with horizontal wisps of white. Every morning when I woke up, the first thing I did was look out my window, and for some reason seeing that blue sky always made me feel hopeful. Ruth gave me a big smile, and I smiled back, but I could feel my heart hammering in my chest. I knew it was partly from riding there so quickly, and partly because I wasn't sure what was going to happen, and I didn't know why it was happening. It had sounded like a good idea the day before, and this morning it had seemed better than another day riding through endless fields of tumbleweeds on my Stingray, going nowhere, but always hoping to end up somewhere, and yet at that moment, I wasn't so sure. What was I walking into? What if I wasn't smart enough to learn whatever magic she was going to teach me? What if she found out the truth about my family? What if she was really some crazy lady who was going to kidnap me and take me out into the middle of the desert and do black magic with my dead body? I had seen a movie called Voodoo Woman a while back, and suddenly I wondered if Ruth was a mad sorceress who was going to turn me into a monster she could control with her mind and then take over the world. My arms went weak. I had the door halfway open, but suddenly it felt heavy. It resisted me. I looked at my bike lying on its side and at the nearly empty parking lot. What was I doing? Why had I agreed to this? I could get on my bike and ride away and never come back. Ruth smiled and called out my name. Jim, it's so good to see you. For a moment, I wasn't sure you were going to come. She nodded her head in a grandmotherly way and waved at me to come in. I felt warm inside, and she didn't seem like a mad sorceress bent on my destruction. So I pushed the door open. It now really easily swung open. You were riding that bike down the street like you were being chased, she said as I stepped inside. Well, I often felt like I was being chased, but I did not know who was chasing me. Suddenly, my face flushed with shame. Maybe she saw my fear or my doubts. Maybe she had x-ray vision. I looked down at my old tennis shoes. There was a small hole at the top of my right shoe, and I was embarrassed. I curled my toes so she wouldn't see them. This is my son, Neil. He's the magician. If she had noticed the hole in my shoe, she was hiding it well. Neil didn't look like a magician. He had big black glasses and the same shade of brown hair as his mother. He seemed normal enough. No magic hat, no cape, no mustache. So, I hear you like magic. Neil's voice was deep and slow. He had what looked like 50 decks of cards stacked on the glass countertop. Well, yeah, it's pretty cool. Do you know any card tricks? Neil started shuffling a deck in his hands. The cards seemed to fly from his right hand to his left hand, back and forth, flying through space. I wanted to learn how to do that. He stopped and fanned the deck out in front of me. Pick a card. I looked at the cards. One card was sticking out slightly, so I figured that was the obvious choice, and instead picked a card way off to the right. Now, don't show me what it is, but hold it in front of you and take a look. I glanced down, keeping the card close to my chest, just in case there were any mirrors behind me. It was the Queen of Spades. Now, put that face down anywhere in the deck, and now I want you to shuffle the cards. Mix them up any way you want. Here you go. Neil handed me the entire deck, and I tried to shuffle them. Not like he had, but I managed to get my hands around the cards and did a pretty good job of shuffling them. Shuffle them again. I did it again, and it was a little better this time. The cards stacked a little more crisply and orderly. And now a third time. This time I remembered to push my knuckles into the cards to make them bow. And when they came together, they were like two gears that spun together. Very good. I handed the deck back to him. He started turning the cards over one by one, face up. Every once in a while, he would hold up a card and say, "Well, this is not your card." Finally, he turned over the Queen of Spades. "Ah, this is the one. This is your card." He waved the card around with a flourish and set it face up in front of me on the counter. "That's cool," I said with a smile, wondering how he knew it was my card. I picked it up and turned it over. I checked all four sides of the card to see if it was bent at all. Nope. "Do you know who this is, who the Queen of Spades represents?" I tried to remember the name of a queen I had heard about in history class, but I could only remember one. Queen Elizabeth? Neil smiled at me. Now, if this were an English deck of cards, you would be correct, but this happens to be a French deck of cards, and in the French deck, each queen represents a different woman in history or mythology. The Queen of Hearts and the Queen of Diamonds in a French deck represent Judith and Rachel, both powerful women from the Bible. The Queen of Clubs is known as Argyne, who isn't anyone I've ever heard of, but her name is an anagram of Regina, which is Latin for queen. And the Queen of Spades, your card, is the Greek goddess Athena. She is the goddess of wisdom and the compassion and the companion of all heroes. If you go on a heroic quest, you definitely want Athena on your side. So how did you know that was my card? Well, now you know a magician never reveals his tricks, but given that you're here to learn, I guess I could let you in on the secret. Neil turned the card over. This deck happens to be a marked deck. It looks like a regular bicycle deck, but if you look closely at what looks like a flower here at the bottom, you can see that there are 8 petals around the center. Each petal represents a card from 2 to 9, and the center of the flower represents the 10. Over to the side, these 4 swirls represent the suits. He pointed to another design to the side of the flower. When magicians mark decks, we shade in either a petal or the center, and a petal to represent the jack, queen, and king. If nothing shaded, it's an ace, and then we mark up here to show the suit. So if you look at your card, you can see the code. The center is shaded plus the number 3 petal, so that is a queen. And over here, you can see that the spade is shaded. I studied the card. The shading was subtle, and if I didn't know what I was looking for, I would never have seen it. It takes some study, but once you've memorized it, you can read them quickly. I looked at all the other decks spread out on the counter. Are all of these decks marked? No. These are all different types of trick decks. There are stripper decks and Svengali decks and gaff decks, forcing decks. I even have a brainwave deck. I made them all. Cards are my specialty. Now, I had heard of gaff decks with trick cards like the 13 of diamonds or a dead king of spades or a joker who is holding the exact card someone in the audience picks. But that was it. All the other names sounded so mysterious to me. Stripper decks? Brainwave decks? I had no idea what these could be. But I didn't want to admit my ignorance to Neil. You know, in World War II, there were special decks of cards that were made and sent to prisoners of war in Germany? Yep. Each card could be peeled apart, and hidden inside was a section of a map that, if you pieced them all together, showed a secret escape route for the prisoners. Now, that was an amazing magic trick. Neil put the Queen of Spades back in the marked deck and handed it to me. You can have this. It's a gift. I took the deck from him. No one ever just gave things for free. Thanks, I said. Thanks a lot. I vowed to myself to memorize every marked card. So, my mother tells me she's going to teach you some really cool magic. I smiled, not sure what to say. Well, her magic is way beyond anything we have out here. He waved his hand around the store. With her magic, you can learn to get anything you want. It's kind of like a genie in a bottle. But she's going to introduce you to the genie in your head, so just be careful what you wish for. 3 wishes? I asked. As many wishes as you want. It's going to take a lot of practice, though. It's much harder than learning card tricks, but it might not look like much. I had to practice for a really long time. Now, just remember to pay close attention to everything she says. There aren't any shortcuts, and you have to follow every step exactly as she tells you. I nodded at Neil and put the marked deck of cards in my pocket. She's taking you in the back now. We have a small office back there. Remember, do whatever she tells you. He looked over and smiled at her. Ruth patted her son on the forearm and then looked at me. Come on, Jim, let's get started. She walked toward a door in the back wall of the store, and I followed, having no idea what I was really doing. The back office was dim and smelled a bit musty. There were no windows and only an old brown desk and 2 metal chairs. The carpet was brown shag, matted in the middle of the room and sticking up like short brown grass around the walls. There were no magic tricks in here, no wands or plastic cups or cards or hats. Sit down, Jim. Ruth sat in one of the metal chairs, and I sat down in the other. We were face to face, and our knees were almost touching. My right leg was jittering up and down, which it did every time I was nervous. My back was to the door, but I knew where it was in case I needed to run. I mentally calculated how long it might take me to get out of there and get to my bike. I'm glad you came back today, Ruth smiled at me, and I felt a little less jittery. How do you feel? Okay. Well, what are you feeling right now? I don't know. Are you nervous? No, I lied. Ruth put her hand on my knee and pressed down, and my knee immediately stopped moving. I braced myself, ready to run if this got any weirder, and she took her hand off my knee. You were shaking your leg like you were nervous. Well, I guess I'm just wondering what you're going to teach me. The magic I'm going to teach you is not something you can buy in a store. This magic has been around for hundreds, maybe thousands of years, and you can learn it only if somebody teaches you. I nodded. But you have to give me something first. I was pretty sure I would have given Ruth anything to learn her secrets, but other than my bike, I didn't have very much. What do you want? You need to promise me that you will teach someone else what I'm teaching you this summer, and you have to get that person to promise they will teach someone, and so on. Can you do that? I had absolutely no idea who I would teach, and at that point I didn't even know whether I could teach someone. But Ruth was just staring at me, waiting for an answer, and I knew there was only one right answer. Okay, I promise. I thought about crossing my fingers behind my back just in case I couldn't find anyone to teach, but instead raised three fingers up in the air like I'd seen the Boy Scouts do. I figured, well, that made it official. Now close your eyes. I want you to imagine you are a leaf blowing in the wind. I opened my eyes and grimaced. I was really tall for my age, but only about 120 pounds. I was more like a twig stuck in the ground than a leaf blowing in the wind. Close your eyes, she said kindly, and nodded. I closed my eyes again and tried to imagine a leaf blowing in the wind. Maybe she was going to hypnotize me into thinking I was a leaf. I had seen a stage hypnotist before, and he had made people from the audience think they were different farm animals, and then he had them all start fighting with each other. I started laughing and opened my eyes. Ruth sat upright in the chair across from me, her hands resting palms down on her thighs, and she sighed a little. Jim, the first trick is to learn how to relax every muscle in your body. It's not as easy as it sounds. I wasn't sure I ever felt relaxed. It seemed like I was always ready to either run or fight. I opened my eyes again, and Ruth tilted her head to the right and looked straight into my eyes. I'm not going to hurt you. I'm going to help you. Can you trust me? Well, I thought about what she was asking. I didn't know if I trusted anyone in my life, certainly not adults. But no one had ever asked me to trust them before, and I kind of liked the way that felt. So I wanted to trust Ruth. I wanted to learn what she had to teach me. Just the whole situation felt so weird. Why, I asked, why are you going to help me? Because the second we met, I knew you had potential. I see it, and I want to teach you to see it too. Now, I didn't know what potential was or how she knew I had it. I also didn't know then that she probably would have seen potential in anyone who had strolled into the magic shop on that summer day in 1968. Okay, I said, I trust you. Good. Then, that's where we will begin. Focus on your body right now. How does it feel? I don't know. Well, think about riding your bike. What does it feel like in your body when you ride your bike really fast? Well, it feels good, I guess. And what is your heart doing right now? Beating, I said, and smiled. Slow or fast? Fast. Okay, good. How do your hands feel? I looked down and noticed my hands were gripping on the edge of the chair, and so I relaxed them. They're relaxed. Okay, what about your breathing? Is it deep or shallow? Ruth took a deep breath in and out. Like this? Or like this? And she started breathing really fast, like a panting dog. Well, I guess it's somewhere in between. Are you nervous? No, I lied again. Your leg is shaking again. Well, maybe a little. The body is full of signs about what's going on inside us. It's really amazing. Someone can ask you how you are feeling, and you might say, well, I don't know, because maybe you don't know, or maybe you don't want to say. But your body always knows how you are feeling. When you are afraid, when you are happy, when you are excited, when you are nervous, when you're angry, when you're jealous, when you're sad. Your mind might not know, but if you ask your body, it will tell you. It has a mind of its own in a way. It reacts and it responds. Sometimes it reacts the right way in a situation, sometimes the wrong way. Do you understand? I suddenly thought about how, yeah, that was true. When I would come home, I could tell immediately what mood my mother was in as soon as I walked in the door. She didn't have to say a word. I could just feel it in the pit of my stomach. I shrugged. I was trying to follow what she was saying. Do you ever get really sad or really angry? Sometimes. Actually, I got angry a lot, but I didn't want to say so. I want you to tell me about an instance where you were angry or afraid, and then we're going to talk about how it feels in your body when you tell me about it. My mind started racing. I didn't know what to tell her. Should I tell her about the time I went to Catholic school and the nun slapped me and without thinking I slapped her back? Or maybe about Thursday night when my dad came home drunk again? Or I could tell her about what the doctor said when I took my mother to the hospital and how it made me want to hit him or crawl into a hole or both. Jim, your thoughts are so loud I can hear them, but I can't make them out. Tell me what you're thinking right at this very moment. Well, I'm thinking about all the things I don't want to tell you. She smiled. Oh, well, it's okay. There's nothing you can say that would be wrong. We're talking about what you felt. Feelings are not right or wrong. They're just feelings. Well, I didn't really believe what she was saying. I felt an enormous amount of shame about my feelings, my anger, my sadness, all the way my emotions seemed to just take me over. I wanted to run away. Your leg is going up and down a mile a minute right now, she said. Look, I'm going to count to three, and I just want you to start telling me a story. You're not going to think about what you're going to say, okay? I'm just going to count to three. Ready? Well, I was still trying frantically to clear away all of my erupting thoughts and feelings to find something that was not so embarrassing. I didn't want to scare her away. One. What if she were Catholic? And would be horrified to hear I slapped a nun and was kicked out of school and sent away to live with my older sister and her husband, where I also got in a fight and got kicked out of that school. What if she didn't want me to come back because I was too violent? Two. What if I told her about how mad I was at my dad for getting drunk and wrecking our car, and now we had to drive around with the entire front end dented in and the bumper held on with a rope, and it was like a big sign that said, look how poor we are. We can't even afford to get our car fixed. What if she thinks I'm a bad son? Three. Go. Well, my dad drinks. Not every day, but a lot. He will go drinking and disappear sometimes for weeks, and we will be left without any money except for the public assistance checks we get, and they don't cover much. When he's not drinking, we are all tiptoeing around the house, trying not to set him off. When he does drink at home, he yells and swears and breaks things, and my mom starts to cry. My brother disappears when this happens, and I hide out in my room. But I'm always listening in case things get really bad and I need to do something. You see, I worry about my mom. She's sick a lot and in bed almost all the time, and she always seems to get worse after he drinks and they fight. She yells at him when he's home, and then when he leaves, she goes silent. She doesn't get out of bed or eat or do anything. I don't know what I'm supposed to do then. Go on, Jim. She was really listening. She really seemed to want to hear what I was saying. She didn't look like she was shocked at all. She was smiling that chocolate chip cookie smile of understanding. Like she knew what I was talking about, or at least she didn't think my family was dirt because we were so poor. Come on, go on. Well, one day I came home from school and everything was quiet, a weird kind of quiet. I went in my mom's room and she was in bed. She had taken a bunch of pills. They're pills to calm her down, but she took too many. I had to run to the apartment next door and ask the lady there to drive us to the hospital. She's had to go to the hospital before like this, my mom, I mean. She's done this kind of thing before. And at the hospital, my mom is in the bed and I'm sitting next to her, and I can hear them talking on the other side of the curtain. One guy is so mad that they have to do all this paperwork for my mom, and he says, well, she's been here before, and he's tired of wasting time on these types of people. And the woman laughs and says something about, well, maybe this will be the last time. I can't really make it out, and then they both laugh, and I'm so mad I just want to tear down the curtain and scream at them. People in a hospital shouldn't be like that. And I'm mad at my mom because I don't understand why she has to do this. I mean, it's not fair, and it's embarrassing. And I'm mad at my dad for making her so angry and so sad. I'm angry at both of them and everyone at the hospital, and I get really, really mad sometimes. I'm not sure what to do now that I've stopped talking. Ruth is sitting across from me in her chair, and I just stared down at the stupid hole in my stupid tennis shoe. Jim, Ruth says my name softly, how do you feel in your body right at this very moment? I shrug my shoulders. I wonder what she thinks of me now that she knows about my family. How does your stomach feel? Well, kind of sick. How does your chest feel? Tight. It hurts a little. What about your head? My head is pounding. And what about your eyes? I don't know why, but the minute she asked that question, I felt like all I wanted to do was close my eyes and cry. But I wasn't going to cry. I didn't want to cry. But I couldn't help it. A tear rolled down my cheek. My eyes are stinging a bit, I guess. Thank you for telling me about your parents, Jim. Sometimes we need to stop thinking about what we should say and just say what it is we need to. Easy for you to say. Ruth and I both laughed, and in that second I felt just a little bit better. My chest doesn't feel as tight. Well, good. That's good. I'm going to teach you how to relax every muscle in your body, and I want you to practice this every day for an hour. Everything we practice here, every morning, I want you to also practice at home at night, sort of like homework. Now, relaxing may sound easy, but it's actually very hard to do, and it takes a lot of practice. I still wasn't sure I could remember a time when I felt relaxed. I felt tired plenty of times, but I don't know if I've ever felt relaxed. I wasn't even sure what it meant. Ruth told me to sit in the chair in a comfortable position and close my eyes. She asked me again to imagine I was a leaf blowing in the wind. It felt kind of cool to soar around the streets in my head, and I felt a little lighter in the chair. "Now don't slouch," she said. "You want to stay awake, and you want to keep your muscles engaged even though you're going to be relaxing them. Take a deep breath in, and then let it out. Three times. Inhale through your nose and blow out through your mouth." I breathed as deeply as I could. Three times. "Now, I want you to focus on your toes. In your mind, think about your toes. Feel your toes. Wiggle them around a little. Curl them up in your shoes and then relax. Take a deep breath in and then out again slowly. Just keep breathing and focusing on your toes. Feel them getting heavier and heavier." I took some more deep breaths in and out and tried to focus on my toes. You would think that would be easy, but it wasn't. I wiggled them around a little in my shoes, but then I started wondering if I would get new shoes before school started. And I started to think about not having money, and I forgot all about my toes. It seemed like Ruth knew every time I started thinking about something other than my toes, because each time my mind wandered off to anything other than my toes, she would interrupt me at that exact moment and tell me to take a deep breath again. I can't tell you how long I had to breathe and think about my toes, but it seemed like forever. "Now, I want you to take a deep breath and focus on your feet." I was getting hungry. I was getting bored. What did my feet have to do with learning magic? It was probably getting close to lunch. Maybe she was going to starve me to death. She must have been reading my mind, because I swear she knew exactly when to interrupt me. "Bring your mind back to your feet." I rotated my ankles and thought about my big, stupid, hungry feet. "Now think about your ankles and your knees. Relax your thighs. Feel your legs getting heavy and dropping into the chair." Okay, so I imagined I was the fattest man in the world and that the chair was getting so heavy it would drop through the shag carpet and end up in China. "Now, relax the muscles in your stomach. Tighten them and then relax them." I did as she said, only to have my stomach growl so loud I was sure she could hear it. "Now your chest, Jim. Take a deep breath in and out and relax your chest. Feel your heart beating and relax the muscles around your heart. Your heart is a muscle pumping blood and oxygen throughout your body. You can relax it like any other muscle." I wondered if I relaxed my heart whether my body would just stop working. What would Ruth do then? "Focus on the center of your chest. Feel the muscles of your chest relaxing. Take a deep breath in and feel your heart beating as you relax further. And breathe out again and focus on relaxing the muscles of your chest." And I noticed as I did the exercise, my heart was no longer racing. And I know we've read some of this, so I'm going to skip a little bit of the description of what the medical is all about. "Now I want you to relax your shoulders, your neck, your jaw. Let your tongue drop to the bottom of your mouth. Feel your eyes and your forehead tighten and relax. Let everything, every muscle in your body, just relax." Ruth didn't say anything else for what seemed like forever. I sat there trying to relax, trying to breathe in and out slowly, trying not to fidget. I could hear her taking in deep breaths and blowing them out. I took this as a signal I should do the same. It's hard to breathe when you're thinking about how you should breathe. Once or twice I tried to peek out at Ruth through squinted eyes, and I could see she had her own eyes closed and was mirroring my position in the chair. And finally she spoke. "Okay, time up. Time is up. Open your eyes." I opened my eyes and sat up in the chair. And the body did feel different, a little strange. "That's it, Jim. And I bet you could use a snack." She pulled out a drawer in the desk and opened a bag of Chips Ahoy chocolate chip cookies and said, "Take as many as you want." I took a handful. They're my favorites. And then she looked at me over the rim of her glasses that she had put on and said, "You're on your way." Well, I didn't really know what I was on my way to. I wasn't sure what was really magic about just sitting in a chair for an hour. "Jim, I want you to practice relaxing your body, especially in situations with your family, like you told me about. You can stay relaxed even when you're feeling angry or sad. I know it seems like a lot of work, but eventually you'll be able to get into a state of total relaxation almost instantly. And it's a great trick to learn. Trust me on this." "Okay, but can I ask why?" "Well, there are a lot of things in life we can't control. It's hard, especially when you're a child, to feel like you have control over anything, like you can change anything. But you can control your body and you can control your mind. And that might not sound like a lot, but it's very powerful. It can change everything." "I don't know." "Oh, you will. Keep coming back. Keep practicing everything you learned this summer, and someday you will." I nodded, but I didn't know if I would come back or not. This wasn't like the magic tricks I wanted to learn. "Do you know who Isaac Newton is?" she asked. "Some kind of scientist?" "Yes, very good. He was a physicist and a mathematician, maybe one of the greatest scientists of all time. There's a story about him you might like. He didn't have a great life. His father died 3 months before he was born. He was premature and without a father, so you could say he didn't really get a fair start in life. His mother remarried when he was 3 years old, and he didn't care much for his stepfather, and at one point he threatened to burn down the house with both of them inside. Isaac was a pretty angry young man when he was about your age. Anyway, his mom took him out of school because she wanted him to be a farmer. That's what his father had been, and that's what everyone expected him to be as well. But Isaac hated farming. He hated everything about it. A teacher convinced his mother to let him go back to school, and he became the top student, but only because he was horribly picked on and bullied by other students, and getting the very best grades was his form of revenge. Later, he went to college, but in order to pay for it, he had to be the valet at a school in exchange for his tuition and food. He may not have had the same advantages as other kids, or the same luck, or the same money, but he ended up changing the world. I never knew famous scientists hated their parents or fought with their classmates. I said goodbye to Ruth and to Neil, and was just about out the door of the magic shop when I heard Ruth say, "Now don't forget, Jim, practice what we talked about." She looked at me directly in my eyes and smiled. I pedaled out to Avenue I with a feeling of warmth throughout my body. I had no idea why she was teaching me to relax my body, but I'd go home and practice and see if it was really magic. Today, I know that a large part of what Ruth began to teach me that first day had to do with the brain, and he goes on to describe that. So that was her trick number one. And she says the next one is where she teaches him thinking about thinking. And let's see. Is there anything going on here that I should respond to? Looks like just a lot of good stuff about Nasha and her joy, which is great. She should probably be telling a story because it probably matches up with her story. Anyway, chapter 3. A good magician signals to the audience that he's about to do his next trick. A great magician already has the audience under his spell before they even realize he's moved on to the next trick. Ruth was a great magician. I never knew there were voices in my head until Ruth pointed them out. I never knew how loud they were until Ruth asked me to try to keep them silent. It was hard to train my body to relax, especially at home in a small apartment, where the television always seemed to be blaring and every deep breath was infused with the stale cigarette smoke that hung heavy in the air. But if relaxing my body was difficult, silencing my thoughts was impossible. I had been coming to the magic shop for 10 days, and in many ways it was more comfortable than my own house. I loved the quiet and the calm, and after the first few days of lessons, Ruth started to bring lunch every day. We would finish our magic practice and go to the front of the store, and out would come a big green Tupperware container with a white plastic lid inside, of which was usually sliced pieces of fruit or cheese and crackers or nuts. The only nuts I usually liked to eat were corn nuts, but I tried Ruth's varieties, even though some of them were kind of weird. This was always followed by my favorite, Chips Ahoy cookies, and if Neil wasn't busy, he would join us and tell stories or show me a new magic trick or the latest card deck he was making. Neil liked to talk with his mouth full, and even though we were an odd and temporary trio, I felt, close to them, sort of like they were family. I didn't have to be the caretaker in my magic shop family, and for 2 hours a day I had their undivided attention. We talked and joked, and there was an ease about it, unlike at home where certain topics were avoided, and underlying anger or resentment could surface at any time. Neil began every story by putting his reading glasses on, and then looking over them and smiling at you as he began. He told a story about being stationed in the Korean Demilitarized Zone. He said he and his buddies were performing a magic act inside their canteen when their commanding officer came in and demanded they immediately report to the 38th parallel, the dividing line between North and South Korea. He and his two army buddies arrived at the checkpoint, but the military police wouldn't clear them to enter because, while they had their weapons, they were still wearing the top hats and long tails from their magic show performance. Now, I don't know if this story or any of the stories Neil told me were true or exaggerated, but they did make us laugh. The kind of laughing where once you start, you just can't stop, and in those moments I could completely relax and let go of the voice in my head that Ruth was telling me about. Ruth told me tales of her living in a small town in Ohio, where everyone cared for each other and where long summer days were spent with family and friends. Sometimes I imagined Neil taking me on as an apprentice and teaching me all of his most top-secret magic tricks. I could even imagine the marquee advertising the two of us in big lights. It's funny how, when you've been starved of such experiences, you want to hold them and not let them go. The connection I had with Ruth and Neil was special and real, and I felt that connection with others throughout my life. Sometimes it's a random person in an elevator where you look into each other's eyes and for reasons you can't explain, there's a connection. Not just simply eyes meeting, but some deeper knowing and an acknowledgement of each other's humanity and the reality of being on the same path. And when that happens, it's pretty magical if you really think about it. Other times, I've looked into the eyes of someone who's homeless or just down, and you're going to have, let's see, I skipped one, just down and out. And when our eyes connected, as if I could see my very own face staring back at me. And for that brief moment, and sometimes longer, I experience the pain of my own journey and feel deep empathy followed by gratitude that my journey has taken me to where I am today. Everyone has a story, and I've learned that at the core of it, most of our stories are more similar than others. Connection can be powerful. Sometimes just a brief meeting can change someone's life forever. Clearly, that was the case with Ruth. That first encounter changed everything, putting my life on a far different trajectory than it would have been on. Ruth wasn't a supernatural being, even though at 12 I like to imagine she was. She was simply a human being who had the profound gift of empathy and intuition, of being able to care about another human being without expecting anything in return. She gave me her time and her attention, and she exposed me to a type of magic that I still use to this day. There were some hours in the magic shop where I was convinced that being there was a waste of time and that I couldn't possibly learn what she was trying to teach me. And there were other times when I truly thought she was pretty close to crazy. Today, I know that the techniques Ruth taught me were in many ways age-old and had been part of Eastern traditions dating back thousands of years. And now science acknowledges that neuroplasticity is not only a reality, but an inherent part of how the brain functions. When Ruth told me she was going to teach me to turn off the voices in my head, I had no idea what she was talking about, but I decided to go along with it anyway. "Relax your shoulders," she said. "Relax your neck and your jaw. Feel the muscles in your face relax," she said, all things that I knew how to do. Ruth talked me through relaxing my body yet again, her soft voice making my body feel so light I wouldn't have been surprised if I was hovering over the chair, levitating like a playing card out of one of Neil's magic rising decks. And she says, "Now I want you to empty your mind." That was a new one. I suddenly felt the weight of my body against the chair. What was Ruth talking about exactly? How was I supposed to empty my mind? My thoughts were off and running, and I opened my eyes to see Ruth smiling at me. "This is another trick," she said. "Okay, how do I do it?" "Well, this gets a little complicated because your mind is going to think about thinking, and the minute it does that, you're going to have to stop thinking about thinking without thinking about it." "Huh? Do you know what a narrator is?" "Sure," I said. "It's like you guiding me through the relaxation trick." Ruth clapped her hands together twice and laughed a little. "When you do the relaxation trick at home, how do you do it?" I thought about this for a second. "Well, I do it the same way. The same way that I do it here." "Well, I'm not there narrating, so who narrates it?" "Well, you do, but in my head." "But it's not really me in your head, so who's narrating?" Well, as far as I was concerned, it was her voice in my head telling me to focus and relax every muscle in my body. "It's your voice." "But it's not actually me, so who is it?" I guessed at what she was wanting me to say. "You mean it's me?" "Yeah, it's you, talking to yourself in your head, and it sounds like me because that's what you want it to sound like. This narrator is very good at doing impersonations. It can sound like anyone." "Oh, okay." We all have this voice that talks to us nonstop in our heads. From the moment we wake up to the minute we go to bed at night, it's always there. Think about it. It's like one of those radio DJs telling you what's coming next, giving you the playlist every second of the day. I thought about this. I listened to Boss Radio, Top 40 Hits, 9:30 on the KHJ AM dial in Los Angeles. I imagined the real Don Steele narrating my life. Imagine this DJ in your head telling you everything about everything all day long. You're so used to it, you probably don't even notice that the radio in your mind is playing at full volume and it never gets turned off. Was that true? I wasn't sure. I hadn't noticed it before. I was always thinking about stuff, but I never really thought about thinking before. This voice in your head is judging every second of your life as either good or bad, and your mind responds to what the voice is telling you, as if it actually knew you. I was totally confused. The problem is that often your response isn't one that is necessarily good for you. "Well, it's me in my head, so don't I know me?" "No, actually you don't. You are not the voice in your head. You, the real you, is the person who is listening to the DJ. I wonder just how many people Ruth thought lived inside me. Maybe she heard voices in her head, but I was pretty sure it was just me in my head, not some DJ telling me the weather and queuing up the next song. "Look, here's what I want you to understand," she said. "You can't trust the voice in your head, the one that's talking to you all the time. It's more often wrong than right. You can think of this trick as learning to turn the volume way down and eventually turning it off altogether. And then you'll understand what I'm talking about." "Okay, I guess I could give it a try." "What's the DJ saying right now, right at this very second, in your head?" Well, I thought about what I was thinking. "He's saying that I have no idea what you're talking about, and this isn't going to work." The DJ was also saying that this whole thing really sounded stupid, but I wasn't going to tell her that. She smiled at me. "That's good. You see, you just thought about what you were thinking about. That's the first part of this trick." I nodded, as if I understood, but I really didn't. "We're going to practice thinking about thinking. Now, close your eyes and take a minute to relax your body again." So, I closed my eyes and went through the relaxation sequence that I'd practiced 100 times by now. Started with my toes and worked my way to the top of my head, every muscle relaxing as I thought of it in my mind. And by now, it felt good, like being in a tub that was already slowly filling up with warm water. "Now, just focus on your breath," Ruth said, "in and out. Just think about your breath and nothing else, just your breath." So I took breath in through my nose and slowly exhaled, and then another. And after a few more breaths, I felt an itch on my face and moved my hand up to scratch it. And as I did so, I felt a bump. I hoped it wasn't a pimple coming up. There was a girl I liked who had just moved in above us in the apartment complex. Her name was Chris, and her hair was long and dark, almost down to her waist. I spoke to her that first day I saw her and afterward wondered if she thought I was a dork. She was nice enough, and I smiled as we talked. "Would she consider hanging out with me?" And I suddenly remembered my crooked tooth and ran my upper lip over it. No, she wouldn't. What was I thinking? Pimples and a crooked tooth? I mean, geez. I remember her looking at me and then turning and walking away. I wasn't good enough for her. Ruth said, "Keep focusing on your breath. If the DJ starts talking, just stop listening and go back to focusing on your breath." My mind had gone off, and I hadn't even noticed it. I went back to thinking about my breath, but then started thinking about hanging out with a guy from my class. He lived in the nice part of town. His father owned a construction company, and they lived in a huge house, and his parents drove matching Cadillacs. He invited me for dinner once last year, and during dinner his mother asked where I lived, and then what type of work my father did. I wanted to crawl under the table and disappear. My father didn't have a job, and had been arrested on more than one occasion for being drunk and disorderly. It wasn't something I could tell her, and probably wasn't something she wanted to hear. Oh, I died again. I was thinking about something other than my breathing. This was hard. I couldn't do it. It seemed like I could only take about 5 breaths before I started thinking about something else. I decided to count how many breaths, but then realized that if I was counting breaths, I was still thinking. Oh, geez, this is impossible. Are people really able to do this? Could Ruth do this trick? I mean, how many breaths could she take without thinking about something? Maybe I should ask her. Did it take Ruth a long time to learn? Or was I just really bad at it? What's the point, anyway? And on I went. I tried my best to slow my thoughts down, but apparently my mind was unable to sit still like the rest of me. Would she know if I just faked it? "Open your eyes," she said. I looked at her. I had totally failed this one. "It's too hard," I said. "I can't do it." "You can do anything, Jim." "Well, not this. Just takes practice. Just try to stop your thoughts for a second, and then a few more seconds, and then a little longer. I'm really not good at this." Ruth just looked at me and said nothing for a few seconds. "Everyone who tries this says the same thing at first. You can be good at anything you want, even this, you just don't know it yet." I suddenly felt the pain of all the times that I felt that I wasn't good enough, or didn't belong, or couldn't afford something. And just like that, I felt my eyes start to sting. Every once in a while, during that time with Ruth, those feelings would well up and I would want to lay my head down and cry. When your mind wanders away from your breath, it's not good or bad. It's just doing what it does, so just notice it, and then guide it back to your breath. Help it focus again, that's all. You just have to show it who's in control. All I want you to do is notice when you are thinking, and then you'll begin to notice when your mind isn't running all over the place. All right, I'll practice. Excellent, that's all you can do. Practice, practice, and more practice. Is that the way it was for you? I asked. Exactly the same, she said. Okay, I felt a little better. Do I relax my body first? Yes, relax first, then calm your mind by taming your thoughts. Eventually, all the tricks I teach will just flow together, and you'll relax and quiet your mind at the same time. But for now, do it step by step. So I went home that day determined to master the art of silencing the obnoxious DJ in my head. My dad was still gone when I got home, and my mom was in her room in bed. I sat in silence in my room, concentrating on turning off the DJ, slowly breathing in and out. But the silence only seemed to make that voice in my head grow louder. I knew my dad was on a drinking binge, and at any moment he could burst through the door either really drunk or really hungover. It was like the scene in my life was on repeat, playing out over and over again, always the same. He'd walk in the door. My parents would have a loud fight. He would blame her for all of his problems in the past and then make promises for the future that he could never keep, over and over again. If anyone in my family noticed me sitting in a chair with my eyes closed, more often than not, they never said anything about it. No one asked me what I was doing. No one asked me what I was thinking. And they certainly never asked what I was feeling. I tried my best to practice Ruth's magic, but with every day that my dad stayed away, I could only wonder and worry about what was going to happen when he finally showed up. How would the argument begin? What if my mom overdosed on pills again? I tried to stop thinking, but it was impossible. Would I call the police or an ambulance? Would I have to talk to somebody? How would I explain to my brother hiding under the covers in our room when they came for my mom? Would they take my dad away? I tried to focus my mind on my breathing, but my mind could only conjure up disaster scenario after disaster scenario, each one beginning with my father walking through the front door. It was like knowing there was a tornado about to touch down, but being so frozen in fear you couldn't run and take cover. Sometimes I had dreams like that, nightmares really, where I opened my mouth to scream out a warning to someone, but no sound would come out. Ruth seemed to know I was struggling because she switched things up on me a few days later. Let's try a different way to stop all those thoughts in your head. She brought a candle and lit it with a little cardboard match, and she put it on the office desk, and she had me move my chair so that I was facing the candle. I want you to focus on the candle, the light of the candle. She had me take deep breaths in and out and just stare at the lit candle. Just think about the light. Every time your mind wanders, focus it back on the light. In a way, it was easier for me to quiet my mind with my eyes open. It was when I closed my eyes and everything went dark that most of my worries came rushing out, and in the dark there was no distraction, and every fear seemed to want to come out and play. When were we going to get evicted again? Why did my dad have to drink? Was my mom ever going to get better? When would we have money? Why couldn't I fix my family? What was wrong with me? And when I stared at the candle flame, it was like I could get lost in it. I could focus on the blue at the bottom of the fire and then on the orange in the middle, which looked like a Halloween candy corn. Sometimes I would focus on the white tip of the flame. It almost felt like I could go inside it. It was so much easier to quiet the DJ simply by staring at the single flame that would flicker ever so slightly with every breath I took. It also reminded me of the time when my friends and my family invited us several years before to their cabin in the mountains. There was a fireplace, and I remember sitting in front of it, and during that brief period of time, my father actually had a job. He hadn't gotten drunk in some time, and my parents were civil, and my mom's health seemed better. I sat in front of the fire and looked at the flames, and for a while I was lost in them. I was feeling warm, feeling good, feeling happy. I spent so many hours over those weeks with Ruth watching that candle, and to this day the sight of a lit candle brings me to a place of calm. I didn't have a candle at home that first day. I remember going with a friend to the Catholic church several weeks before because my grandmother was ill, and he put a dime in a box on the inside of the church and lit a candle and said a prayer. It seemed very foreign to me. On the way home, I made a detour to the church and took two candles and some matches, leaving the 15 cents that I had in my pocket, and every night I struggled and stared at the candle flame, trying to stretch the gap between my thoughts. In all, we spent almost 3 weeks practicing three different ways to make me aware of my thoughts and bring quiet to my mind. Focusing on my breath, staring at a candle flame, and the final method, chanting. "Do you know what a mantra is, Jim?" I shook my head. I didn't have a clue. "It's kind of like a song or a sound you make that helps you focus your mind, just like you've been focusing your mind on your breathing or the candle. This is another way to trick your mind." I looked at her again and noticed she was wearing a necklace with a whistle and a bell. Is that what she was talking about? At that moment, she leaned forward toward me, and the bell made a little tinkle, and I almost started laughing. She looked down at it and laughed. No, that's not what I'm talking about." "Well, what kind of sound?" I had a feeling this was going to be weird. "Well, it depends. People sometimes say a word that is important to them, or a phrase that has some magical meaning, but it can be anything. The words don't really matter. It's the sound that matters. So what do I say? I asked. Well, that's up to you. Whatever it is, you're going to chant it over and over again. Out loud? No, no, to yourself. This was definitely going to be weird. I had no idea what important words I was supposed to come up with, and the only words I have ever said over and over again in my head were curse words, and I was pretty sure that's not what Ruth had in mind. So, what's it going to be? Ruth was waiting patiently for me to come up with some magical words, and I had absolutely nothing. I don't know. I knew that magic words were important. Abracadabra, open sesame. These words had to be just right to work. What is the first word or words that come to your mind? Anything. Chris, I said to myself. It was the girl from the upstairs apartment. I was searching in my head for what I thought would be an appropriate word. I couldn't think of anything else. Suddenly, the image of a doorknob popped in my head. A knob. Chris. Knob. Now, to this day, I don't know how I arrived at that combination of words or what meaning they had to me at that moment, but Ruth looked at me and said, well, do you have it? Yes, I said, but I felt suddenly shy. I'd chosen the wrong words. They were going to sound stupid and probably wouldn't work. Now, say them to yourself, but slowly, and stretch out each word as you say it. Chris, knob, I said to myself. I did it a few times in a row. And now I want you to chant it to yourself over and over for the next 15 minutes. Ruth looked at me, and I'm sure I looked back at her like she was out of her mind. Just focus your mind on the sound of each word. Don't think about anything else. You know what? She was right. It was hard to think about anything else while I was chanting my made-up mantra. And even though I was saying the word Chris combined with the word knob over and over again, I couldn't even focus on her or on a doorknob. It didn't matter if she knew I existed or what she thought of my tooth or if she noticed I had a pimple. That wasn't the point. The point was I didn't hear the DJ. He had stopped playing. I practiced my mantra at home, sometimes for hours at a time, and for reasons I understand now, it was amazingly calming. The repetition and intention, the surest way to change your brain. By combining the breathing technique that Ruth had taught me with either looking at the flame of the candle or slowly repeating my mantra, things began to change. Eventually, my father did come home. This time, he was hungover and repentant, and my mother had come out of her room, and it began, the usual arguments, but this time, it included the fact that we had been given an eviction notice. I had been in my room for the last few hours practicing my breathing and chanting to myself, and for reasons I can't explain, I walked into the room and told them I loved them. I realized I saw them in a different way, and I went back to my room. I didn't feel angry or upset. I just accepted the situation. I realized after a few minutes that I didn't hear anything either in my head or outside of it, and the house had gone silent. I walked back out to the living room and saw that my parents were just sitting there quietly. "It's going to be okay," my dad said. "And we love you too," added my mom. At that moment, I didn't really know if things were going to be okay or not. I knew they loved me as best they could, and that was far different from how I had hoped for so long they would love me. And yet, at that moment, it felt like enough. And he tells more about medical experience. I'm going to skip that. One day, oh, let's see, here it is. He talks about the dilemma of causality, a circular reference problem like the perennial question of what came first, the chicken or the egg. So one day I asked Ruth this very question. She said, "Jim, if you're hungry, it doesn't really matter whether the chicken or the egg comes first, does it?" I had at times been very hungry, and I would have happily eaten a chicken or an egg. She always had a way of breaking things down and putting them in perspective, and day after day she was teaching me how to get a new perspective on my own feelings and thoughts. And this thinking about feeling, this ability of the brain to observe itself, is one of its greatest mysteries. With only 2 weeks left in our summer together, and just as I was wrapping my mind around the idea that I could observe my thoughts and therefore I was separate from my thoughts, Ruth pulled a whole new trick out of her bag. "Jim, have you seen the trick where the magician saws a woman right in half?" I nodded. "Of course." "Well, we're going to do a trick kind of like that, but with your heart. We're going to cut it open, split it right down the middle." I had no idea what she was talking about, but by this time I was used to Ruth springing things on me, and I knew all I could do was settle in, buckle up, and enjoy the ride. So it looks like we're not going to get through the whole book. We got about 5 minutes left, but I'll go as far as I can. Let's see. Anything else interesting going on here? I've been kind of buried in the book. I haven't really been looking at the comments, but it looks like you guys are just kind of sharing your thoughts as we're going along. That's good. Okay. So, chapter 4, Growing Pains. I left earlier than usual for the magic shop because it was expected to be one of the hottest August days on record in Lancaster, triple digits. The sky was full of wispy clouds that looked more sooty than white. It wasn't sunny, and it wasn't cloudy, and everywhere you looked was either brown or gray. I could feel the heat come up from the ground through the pedals of my bike, so hot I thought it would singe the hair on my legs. I had to alternate one hand at a time on the handlebars so both hands didn't feel like they were burning. I tried riding no-handed for a while down Avenue K and was just getting up a good rhythm when I heard yelling from the field next to the Episcopal Church. I recognized the bigger kid, the one who was throwing the punches. He was two grades above me, and both my brother and I had been pushed around, hit a few times, and even spat upon by him and his trusty sidekick. They were a gang of two and pretty much ruled Lancaster in the afternoon between the hours of 3 and 5 during the school year. Obviously, they were operating on extended summer hours because here it was not even 10 a.m., and I could see one of them punching and kicking a kid while the other yelled and laughed. I couldn't see who it was because the kid was on the ground, curled up, and had his head down. His arms were wrapped around the top of his head, trying to protect it, and for a second I thought it might be my brother, but then I remembered he had actually been home when I had left. I'm not sure what it was that made me get off my bike and start yelling at the boys. I was used to defending my brother, a habit that I would carry with me into adulthood, but I didn't go looking for fights, and certainly not with these guys. They didn't hear me at first, and as I walked toward them, it was like I could feel every punch and kick they delivered to the boy on the ground, and my heart started to hammer in my chest. I took a deep breath and yelled again for them to cut it out. Stop it! The big guy was hunched over the kid, and when he heard me, he stood up tall. He gave me a snarly grin and then kicked the kid on the ground one more time in the stomach. It made me flinch and feel like I had just been kicked in the stomach myself. Who's going to make me? Their attention diverted me, and I saw the kid on the ground roll onto his back and start to get up. It was a kid I kind of knew from school, but I couldn't remember his name. But I knew his family had transferred here last year. His dad was out at the airbase. His face was bloody, and his glasses were in the dirt next to him. He had to be about half the size of all three of us. I was as tall as these older kids, but they outweighed me by at least 30 pounds. I watched as he got to his feet and started staggering toward the church, and I couldn't blame him for getting the hell out of there. You going to take his place? The two boys took a step toward me, and I felt my mouth go dry and my ears start to buzz. I tried taking some deep breaths the way Ruth had taught me, but I couldn't seem to get the air to fill up my lungs. This was not going to be good. So you think you're a hero, some kind of freaking hero? I didn't say anything. I tried relaxing my legs and my hands like I had learned in the magic shop. I bounced up and down on the balls of my feet and cleared up my thoughts. If I had to fight, I would. I wasn't going to run. I'm going to kick your ass, and then we're going to take your bike. I still didn't say anything. I sensed the sidekick moving behind me a little, but I just stared straight at the guy who liked to punch and kick. He was the one who called the shots for the pair. He moved his face so close to my face that I could see some sort of white gunk in the corner of his mouth. It was getting hotter out by the second, and his face was sweaty and dirt-stained. Unless you want to kiss my feet. I thought of Ruth and Neil in the magic shop. They'd be waiting for me to ride up by about now. Would Ruth think I had skipped a day with her when I didn't show up? Would anyone find me out here bleeding? Did the other kid go to get help? Did this guy wake up, have his cereal and milk, and just run out of the house ready to beat people up without even wiping his mouth? All these thoughts started racing through my head, but I just stared at the dried white gunk and pretended it was the light on a candle. Kiss my feet, he said. I looked up and into his eyes and spoke for the first time since I had told him to stop beating the other kid. No. He reached out and grabbed the front of my t-shirt. Kiss my feet, he threatened. His mouth began to make a smile like someone who knows he has power over another. His face got right up to mine and I could smell and feel his breath. I closed my eyes for just a second, and in that second something was different. I opened my eyes and looked directly into his. I stared deeply into them, then the way we try to do when we're trying to really understand something. You can do anything you want, but I'm not kissing your feet. He laughed and looked to the side at his friend. I saw him raise his eyebrows, and then he looked back at me. I stared at him without blinking. He lifted his fist and cocked it behind his ear, and I didn't flinch. I just kept my eyes locked on his, and in that moment, I didn't care that he was bigger than me or that there was some other kid's blood on his fist. I wasn't going to back down. I wasn't going to give him the power to make me afraid, and I wasn't going to kiss his feet or anyone's, ever. And for a second, our eyes locked together, and I saw him and knew I, and he knew I saw him, and I saw his own pain and fear, a pain and fear that he tried to hide with his bullying. His gaze broke from mine, and he looked at his sidekick and backed at me. What a waste. He let go of my shirt and pushed me a little so that I stumbled back, but I didn't fall down. He didn't look at me again for the briefest of moments and turned away. It's too hot. Let's get out of here. I felt the other kid give a little push against my back, but it was more for show than anything else, and I could tell he wasn't sure what had just happened. They both started walking away, and I could see the other boy talking to the bully. I knew he was asking why he didn't beat me up, and the bully pushed him and said, "Shut up," and neither of them looked back. I took a few more deep breaths and watched them as they walked away before I turned toward my bike. I wasn't sure what happened or even why I did what I did, but I felt good, and suddenly I realized I was late and Ruth was waiting for me. I hope she didn't think I had just blown her off, and I got on my bike and raced as fast as I could to the magic shop. Seems like a good stopping point. So I hope you've been enjoying the book as much as I have. I'm not sure where we're going to get a chance to finish it, but next time we have an absentee co-host, maybe I'll finish up the book at that point. I'll keep that marker there so we don't have to cover any old material. And I wish you all a happy weekend, and we will see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.